Good afternoon, folks, and welcome to Alaska Gold Trails. We got some surprises and prizes coming up for you in just a few minutes. I'm your host, Jim O'Donner, from the University of Alaska Fairbanks Mining Extension. This is your radio show on mining in Alaska, past, present, and future. More specifically, folks, gold mining in Alaska's misty past, controversial present, and mysterious future. However, today we're going to diverge away from gold a little bit and talk a little bit about black gold, petroleum in Alaska. As you know, I'll be here with you on KFAR 660 on your radio dial each Thursday from 1 to 2 p.m., where we can discuss the entire spectrum of mining in Alaska, from the fascinating and colorful history of the major minor gold rushes to the most recent gold prospecting and mining techniques. Also, we will have special guests to discuss different mining-related topics. Most of all, my friends, give us a call if you have questions or care to make a comment on mining in Alaska, or maybe you just want to chat for a few minutes or want to share one of your favorite frontier experiences. The number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Let's talk gold mining through the years along Alaska Gold Trails. Our guest today, ladies and gentlemen, is Dr. Russell Osterman from the Department of Petroleum at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. He's going to be joining us here in just a couple of minutes. But before he comes in, I'd like to, how would you like to win a prize? You want to win a prize? How would you like to win, let's see, a 1 ounce silver coin from Oxford Assaying and Refining? They're located at 208 Wendell Street. They said if you can answer the following question, that they will be happy to provide a 1 ounce silver coin as a prize. And the question is regarding one of the sponsors here on Alaska Gold Trails. And what we want to know is who they are, where they are, and what they do. And where are you going to get this information? Well, you're probably sitting by your phones right now. Keep in mind that our number here is 479-8255 for this contest. That's 479-TALK. We want to know what advertisement is on the backside of your brand new telephone book. Turn it over. Take a look at the advertisement there. Tell us who the sponsor is. And we will take the third call that will give us the information regarding who they are, where they're located, and what they do. And all that information is right on the back of the brand new telephone book. Third caller. Hello, you're the third caller.
Hi. B&L Pawn Shop.
B&L Pawn Shop. I've got the third caller on the line. Tell us, where are they, my friend?
They're on 605 Gaffney.
605 Gaffney.
The corner of, on the corner there, Cushman and Gaffney.
What is their telephone numbers? You got? Do you have a couple there?
452-3063.
Do you have another?
452-6491.
You've got it. And tell us, what do they do over there at B&L Pawn Shop?
Well, they buy what you've got that you don't need right away. Consignment goods and stuff like that.
I see. They also have a lot of things in stock over there, cameras, stereos. They've got gold, TVs, videos, jewelry,
mm-hmm.
tools, things of that nature.
Car stereos, too.
You bet. They have, you know, it's kind of like walking into a giant garage sale there. And they just have everything that you might imagine over there at B&L Pond. And you know what I heard? I heard that if you tell Killer that you heard about their advertisement on Alaska Gold Trail, she'll sweeten the deal for you. So, by the way, what's your name? Well,
John.
John? Last name John?
Rathbun.
How do you spell it, John?
R-A-T-H-B-U-N.
Okay, John, if you'll stop up here at Washington Plaza at the KFAR studio and pick up a ticket, you can go over to in Oxford Assaying and Refining, located at 208 Wendell Street, and pick up your silver coin, 1 ounce silver coin. John, you've just won it, and thanks a lot for playing the game here.
Thank you. Thank you for Oxford, too.
We've just had a winner of the contest, a 1 ounce silver coin provided by Oxford Assaying and Refining at 208 Wendell Street. Their phone number over there is 456-3967. They have an additional courtesy for people who are interested in gold, silver, and platinum prices each day. They have a quote line, a special quote line that you can call, and that line is 452-7858 in case you would like to know the price of metals on a daily basis. In addition to that, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you who are interested in these contests that we have here on Alaska Gold Trails, it's nice for you to know four or five major sponsors that we speak about here. B&L Pawn is one, of course, Oxford Assaying and Refining, Hector's Welding, of course, is one of the sponsors, and Gabe's Truck and Auto. We like to know who they are, where they are, and what they do. And sometimes this information can be worth perhaps dinner for two or a silver ingot. So keep that in mind. In addition to some of the, in addition to buying gold over there at Oxford Assaying and Refining, where the people are known as the precious metals people, they also have a lot of nice gifts, including gold and silver medallions, gold and silver ingots, investment type precious metals, and things of that nature. So if you're interested in that kind of things, especially a special gift for that special person, take a look over at Oxford Assaying and Refining to find out just exactly what they have in the gift department. Once again, they're located at 208 Wendell, and their phone number is 456-3967. And their quote line for those daily prices on metals is 452-7858. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce our special guest, Dr. Russ Osterman from the University of Alaska Petroleum Department. Welcome to Alaska Gold Trails, Russ.
Thanks, Jim. It's good to be here today.
Well, Russ, we'd like to have a little background on you. Where did you, where were you born, and how old are you? Are you an old man, young man, or?
I don't know. It depends how, yeah, I guess. I was born in Wichita, Kansas in 1952.
I think
about 36.
And in 1936, where did you go to high school?
1952, Jim. I may feel that old.
52, sorry. Where did you go to high school then, Russ?
I went to Southeast High School in Wichita, Kansas. And graduated in 1970 and went on to school at the University of Kansas.
You say you went to school at the University of Kansas?
Mm-hmm.
And when did you graduate from the university?
Well, I graduated in 1974 with a BS degree in chemical engineering and went out to work at DuPont in Orange, Texas.
And how long did you work for DuPont there?
Well, I think it was about 2.5 years. Orange is down right on the Gulf Coast, so it's a pretty hot place, and it's quite a change to come up to Alaska. But I returned to University of Kansas in 1976 and worked towards my PhD.
And when did you complete that work, Russ?
1979.
In 1979?
Mm-hmm.
And that was in what field?
It was in chemical engineering. We had a combined program at Kansas of chemical and petroleum engineering together.
I see. Then you were tightly related then with the petroleum industry in that. You had the practical experience of working with DuPont and then the education. You finished that degree once again?
1979.
And following that period of time, what kind of work experience did you have?
Well, I joined the faculty at Texas A&M University in 1979 in the chemical engineering department and taught there until 1981, mm-hmm. which is when I came up here.
See, what magnetism drew you up to Alaska?
Well, as it turns out, about 1980, the University of Alaska decided that they ought to be getting into petroleum engineering as an educational program, and two friends of mine from the University of Kansas, who had since graduated from Stanford University with their PhDs, came up here in 1980 to start the program. It turns out I was actually at my wedding in Texas, and these two people showed up at my wedding and whisked me aside and told me that there was a neat opportunity available to come to Alaska and build a petroleum engineering program.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm afraid I found that too intriguing to stay in Texas, so we resigned from Texas A&M University, and my wife and I moved up here to Fairbanks in 1981.
When you said we resigned, what does that mean, we resigned? Is that a family term, or was your wife also employed at the university?
No, my wife was a student at the university at that time. She graduated also in 1981. It's a joint decision, so I kind of lump us together in that regard.
I see. What's your wife's name?
Last name is Charlotte.
Charlotte? Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And is she happy with... Is Alaska what she expected?
Well, I don't think it's what we expected. If it had been what we expected, we might not have stayed. But we've been very, very happy here. In fact, she tells me there's no way I could get her to go back to Texas.
Well, but, good on her.
I'm not sure I'd want to go back either. But we've been very happy. We have three children here, and I find it a wonderful place to raise kids. It's a real nice town, and I'm very happy here.
Since you've been here, you've held, several positions at the University of Alaska? What did you come in as, assistant or associate professor? What was the level?
I came in as an assistant professor, and as I'd mentioned, we actually started the program there in 1981 as the first year of the Bachelor of Science degree in Petroleum Engineering program. At that time, we came in where there were three faculty in one room, and we've expanded tremendously, and we'll probably talk about that in a little bit. But since that time, in 1983, I became department head in petroleum engineering, and have since been promoted to associate professor, and I'm also a tenured professor at the university now.
Well, Russ, I'd like to get more involved in what you did in terms of your activities in developing the petroleum department at the University of Alaska, but let me take just a quick break here.
You've heard it said that if something sounds too good to be true, it probably is. Well, here's a rare exception to the rule. Top Shelf from Hormel, a line of main course meals that stay fresh without the use of a freezer, a refrigerator, or even one preservative. They microwave in one-third the time it takes frozen and taste like they're fresh from the kitchen. I know it sounds too good to be true, but one bite will make a believer out of you.
Top Shelf from Hormel. It leaves frozen entrees cold.
By now, you've probably heard of University Resume Service Alaska. Hi, I'm Phil Deischer, owner of University Resume. University Resume Service has been producing custom resumes in Fairbanks for 8 years. We are a professional writing business, and we have helped literally hundreds of people from every trade and profession sell themselves on paper. Professional writing is more than just typing. Indeed, professional writing is a unique skill, the way every profession is unique. Professional writing applied to your resume can give you the edge in landing the interview, which could lead to the job you want. A resume, which has numerous uses, usually takes about 2 hours to write. No more struggling over how to sell yourself on paper. In 2 hours or less, University Resume can have you armed with a custom resume and seeking the job you need for the career you want. For any kind of career writing, from resumes to loan applications, federal form SF-171 federal and state applications, call University Resume Service Alaska at 479-5747. For all types of professional writing, we're in the yellow pages under resumes.
He's a self-made man, a friend at the hiring hall.
I'm Neil O'Kopanen. I don't claim to be qualified to run a propane business in Fairbanks. It would take me at least 2 years to learn to successfully run such a business. In the meantime, employees and customers have suffered at the hands of my inexperience. After all, I've spent the last 40 years as a mining company electrician, teacher, elementary school principal, University of Alaska professor, volunteer fireman, and legislator representing District 21. No, it would be a mistake to let me run a propane business without experience. But I would appreciate your support for my re-election to House Seat 21 on November 8th.
Neil stood the heat for UAM. The powerful local hire. Neil O'Kopanen gets things done.
Paid by Copeland Campaign, 612 Sprucewood, Fairbanks.
Once again, I'd like to remind the listening audience that we're here today with Dr. Russell Osterman from the Petroleum Department, the University of Alaska, Fairbanks. And of course, if you have any questions regarding the petroleum industry in the state of Alaska, why don't you give us a call here. The number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Russ, I think we were talking about your development in the petroleum department at the School of Mineral Engineering at the University of Alaska, and initially you came in as assistant professor, and once again, when did you become department head?
1983.
That didn't take very long. And
growing fast.
You were growing fast. Mm-hmm. You know, during those early years, there was a lot of interest in the petroleum industry in terms of attracting students. Have you found that to remain, the student population remain relatively strong? Has there been a decline? And what kind of cycles do you see developing over the years?
Yeah, well, no, the enrollments have changed dramatically. When we first came in 1981, we were looking at $25 a barrel oil, I think, moving up towards 30, and the petroleum industry was very, very hot at that time. Expansion was taking place at the university. The industry was expanding. And as a result, we had enrollments as high as, I think, 130 students at one time. Now, as the price of oil went down, the fortunes of the petroleum industry go accordingly, and enrollments have declined. So we're right now very much interested in attracting new students into the program. And we may talk about that in a little bit, but the job market for petroleum engineers is excellent right now. These things tend to go in cycles. It takes about 4 years for a student to go through our program to get a baccalaureate degree. And right now, the industry is hiring at nearly twice as many jobs as there are graduates coming out, and that looks like that will extend off into the future.
So you think that prospects look good for student employment in the near future?
Absolutely. Diverge on that a little bit. I just got back about 2 weeks ago from a meeting of all the other petroleum engineering department heads, and it's a fairly small field. We have about 13 departments in petroleum engineering that offer major programs. And what it boils down to is there's about 300 freshmen, 300 sophomores, 300 juniors, and maybe about 400 seniors right now in the whole country in petroleum engineering. The companies hire right now at a rate of about 800 and are projecting going up to about 1,200. Which means there should be an excellent job market at least for the next 4 years and probably a considerable period of time after that as well.
Let's see if we have a call here, Russ. I guess not. regarding the, since you've taken over, I know that there's been a lot of advancements in the School of Mineral Engineering Petroleum Department in terms of laboratory facilities, mm-hmm. and how well are we equipped compared to other colleges to handle these students?
We're very well equipped, both in the research area and in the undergraduate teaching area. I've visited several times almost all the other petroleum engineering departments in the world. Like I said, there's a relatively small number, so one can do that fairly easily. And in the research area, I'd say we're probably one of the top three or four schools in terms of equipment and facilities that we have available. And I imagine that comes as a surprise to a number of people in Alaska, but we have a very well-equipped research program. Mm-hmm. Our undergraduate program is also well-equipped. When you have smaller class sizes like we do now, most classes being under 15 students, it's much easier to equip a laboratory and teach a very good laboratory course with a little bit less equipment. But labs are fully equipped, and we teach a curriculum which is roughly the same that you'd see at University of Texas or California schools. Pretty good curriculum.
This leads us into an area of pride that developed at the end of last year, mm-hmm. and I want to talk about that. Professor Degani that we have at the University of Alaska Petroleum Department took some students down to a science presentation of some kind in the lower states or the coterminous states in which they presented scientific papers on petroleum, mm-hmm. And they were judged alongside of a number of other high-level colleges. Could you give us some information on just exactly what happened at that particular, I guess you call it a contest.
Right, it's a student paper contest, and that is something we're very, very proud of, and particularly proud of Dr. Degani's efforts in advising these students. Set stage a little bit, the Society of Petroleum Engineers is our international technical society, and there is an Alaskan section, but the major meetings for which Alaska participates are in the California region. And we go down each year to an annual technical meeting at which there is a student paper contest between the schools that are in the California region. And that includes Berkeley, Stanford, USC, University of Alaska, and occasionally some of the other state schools in California will participate as well. but primary participants are Stanford, USC, Berkeley, and University of Alaska. In this contest, there are three divisions, a PhD, a master's division, and a BS division, where the students make a presentation of a project they have done, which may be their research for their thesis or simply a project that they've worked on as an undergraduate student. The contests are graded by a panel of judges from industry, usually a couple from California, a couple from Alaska, and the presentations are graded on their technical content as well as the quality of presentation. And this last year, we did a super job. We won the BS division, first place in the BS division, and first and second place in the Master of Science division, which we're particularly happy when we can shut out schools of the quality of Stanford, USC, and Berkeley. I'm not so sure they're happy about it, and we're going to be watching for them this year. They'll probably be back with their guns out for us this coming spring. Those students, I give them a plug. Matt McGuire won the Bachelor of Science division. He was one of our students who graduated last year. Matt now works for ARCO down in Anchorage. Suhail Kadir was one of our graduate students who won the first place in the master's division, and he's now with Stanford University working on his PhD. And Mark Hornbrook was one of our students who won the second place prize in the master's division. He's now with Standard Alaska Production Company in Anchorage. So these students have done themselves proud and us proud, and I think it's particularly important to recognize that Dr. Degani was the advisor of all three of these students. So we kind of keep scoring, says Degani 3 and California nothing. But we're very happy about that.
Well, we were in the School of Mineral Engineering. We were happy to see the results of that. We're very proud.
Good.
When we looked at it from the point of view of the School of Mineral Engineering, we were real pleased with the efforts and the results of that. And he's to be commended. What other types of activities do you feel that you might be entering into that might promote the image of the University of Alaska Fairbanks Petroleum Department? Do you have some other ideas in mind? Or?
Well, in a general sense, I think it's our mission that contributes to that. And when we first started the program, and it really remains the same now, our mission is to provide an opportunity for Alaskans to enter into professional positions in the petroleum industry. And I might be a little bit parochial, but we certainly see the petroleum industry as being the major industry in the state right now, and probably it will remain that way for many years to come. And prior to the coming of the petroleum engineering program, there really was no way for Alaskans who wanted to enter this industry to get educated here and remain in the state. I think that's a major function of a university, especially a land-grant university, is to provide the education for the people of the state to manage their resources. And I think we're meeting that goal. I was just adding up some of the figures before coming over here today, and I was a little surprised that we've already graduated 86 graduates from our program, having only started in 1981. And some 60-plus of those are currently employed in the petroleum industry, most of them in Alaska. And another 11 or 12 of those are in PhD programs at Stanford, University of Texas, Texas A&M, Tulsa, major universities around the country.
So then it's safe to conclude that our students are recognized in the industry as well as in higher level educational units?
Absolutely. It's not easy to get into Stanford or USC or some of these large PhD, larger schools with PhD programs, and it speaks well of our students that they're there. Also, I could add that during the downturn in the petroleum industry that took place basically about 2 years ago now, as far as I know, only one of our graduates was laid off, and the rest were retained at a time when somewhere upwards of 10-15% of some of the people were laid off in some of the companies. So our students have fared very well, and we've heard time and time again back from the companies that they're indeed very happy with our graduates.
Well, look, we'll be right back after a couple of announcements.
Isn't it nice to have a VCR or a Beta right in your own home? You have entertainment when you want it. But from time to time, they do go a little bit sour and need a little fine-tuning. That's where Thomas Video is on your team. Thomas Video understands you want the work done quickly, reliably, at a price you can afford. There's a 30-day warranty on labor at Thomas Video. You'll find them in the 5th Avenue building, 525th Suite 411, downtown Fairbanks. You get in from 4th or 5th Avenues. Thomas Video, you can depend on them.
The way the lifetime service guarantee really works at Seekins Ford Lincoln Mercury, it's based on a philosophy and a promise. The professional commitment of service technicians like John Bickish when he has an opportunity to work on your car.
Treat it like my own. Yeah, I try to do the best job I can, like it was my own personal vehicle.
John Bickish promises you he'll do the best job possible on your car, and Ralph guarantees those repairs for life. Ford's exclusive lifetime guarantee service policy.
We'll show you how it works right here, right now, at Seekins Ford Lincoln Mercury.
We'd like to tell you a little bit about Days Inn in downtown Anchorage. For reservations, call 800-325-2525. Whether you're traveling for business or pleasure, at the Days Inn Anchorage, you can expect personal service, quality accommodations, and affordable rates. The downtown Anchorage Days Inn Hotel offers 116 rooms, each decorated with furnishings and amenities you expect from the expensive lodging chains. With its convenient location, quality accommodations, and friendly staff, there is no better lodging choice in the city. Traveling to the last frontier is truly a unique experience that should not be missed by anyone. You will have the opportunity to witness some of the most beautiful scenery imaginable just a short distance from the Anchorage Days Inn Hotel. A favorite with Fairbanks travelers, the Days Inn Anchorage offers economy and convenience. Located downtown, you are within easy walking distance of all downtown businesses and popular tourist attractions. We invite you to visit the Anchorage Days Inn Hotel. You will experience a relaxed atmosphere designed with your comfort in mind and efficient, friendly staff to assist you with your special needs. Just 14 minutes from Anchorage International Airport and 5 minutes from Merrill Field and 6 blocks from the train station. Days Inn Anchorage is ideally located in the heart of Anchorage. Once again, that's Days Inn downtown Anchorage. For reservations, call 800-325-2525. Once again, I'd like to remind our listening audience that we're here with Dr. Russell Osterman from the School of Mineral Engineering Petroleum Department. If you have any questions of Dr. Osterman or care to make a comment on Alaska Gold Trails, give us a call. The number is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Russ, tell us a little bit more about how the department developed. You said that it had developed a number of laboratories, and in terms of expansion, you were all three in one room in
right.
The beginning.
Right. It was kind of fun. It was all I expected it to be as an experience in getting to build a program. Like I said, we started out in one room with a laboratory, which was not in very good shape. But fortunately, the university and state was generous in initial years, and we received quite a bit of money for equipment purchases. And eventually, initially started out in the basement of the old Brooks building on campus with one laboratory there. And when the addition to the Duckering building was completed here about 3 years ago, I guess, we moved into that. And we now occupy one whole floor in the new addition to the Duckering building, as well as one wing in the older part of the building. So I think it's probably about 8,000 square feet. And in that, we have two large instructional laboratories for our undergraduate students and five of some of the best-equipped research laboratories you'd ever care to find.
Tell me, how do you get money for all this? Is this through the state, or is it funded by the private sector? Or what? How do you get this money?
This has been, I should say, mostly regular university funding. Of course, the Duckering expansion was a part of the university capital budget. The biggest chunk of money we got, I guess, for expansion was a $1 million equipment appropriation, which came from the state legislature, which was actually somewhat outside the university budget. Was put through by the legislature to assist in our effort, but the university, of course, accepted that money and was happy to receive it. But this has all been through the state at this point. We currently look to the companies for money, and both Standard and ARCO and some of the other companies involved in Alaska do support the academic effort with gifts and grants of unrestricted funds. Matter of fact, over the last 2 weeks, I've received almost $10,000 in funds for our program from ARCO and Standard, which we use to help for scholarships for students, help to meet recruiting expenses, and, for example, the expenses of sending students down to the California regional meeting. We try to assist with that when they participate in student paper contest, provide airline tickets and hotel rooms for them.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's kind of interesting that it doesn't just come from one area. It's spread around a little bit. In the area of employment, you made comment that most of your students during the recent decline in oil prices were retained by the companies they were working for. And from another point of view, do you find that the students that are graduating or have graduated last year and will be graduating this year, do you see that they are going to have trouble getting into the industry and gaining employment?
Not at all. They should be in excellent shape, and it's odd that you know we mentioned that right now. In the last 2 weeks, we've had Standard, ARCO come up to interview students on campus. Conoco Oil Company is up here today interviewing our students for placement, and next week Marathon Oil Company is coming in. In addition, our students have found employment with Shell, Union Petroleum, I think Schlumberger International, Texaco, a variety of other companies around the country and around the world. So the job market is excellent right now, and I think it's an excellent opportunity for young people in Alaska, or maybe some who aren't so young who might want to go back to college and get a degree. We like to look at it as an opportunity, like I said, to stay in Alaska if you wish to participate in Alaska and the development of Alaska's resources. Or should also mention that we have graduates working in Scotland, several in the Persian Gulf, in India, Abu Dhabi, it's in the Persian Gulf. One guy works out of Paris and commutes to Brazil. So there's also some fairly exciting international opportunities available for those who wish to go that way.
In addition to the employment for the students that you have, what do you have in terms of local support type businesses? There's the oil industry. Mm-hmm. Are there some satellite businesses in Fairbanks that work to support that industry? Can I give you an example?
Sure.
Of something? You know, I'm closely affiliated with the placer mining industry here, mm-hmm. and in that sense, we see that there are certain manufacturers in this industry that contribute to the support and to the success of the placer mining industry, and one of those peoples happens to be Hector's Welding, located at 13 Mile Richardson Highway. And a lot of people know that they've been in Alaska for about 40 years now, I guess, and producing many items for the people of Fairbanks. And just during the mid-1970s to late 1970s, when there was a mini gold rush here in the state of Alaska, they began manufacturing a sluice box that was of higher standards and capable of collecting finer and finer gold particles and a higher level of recovery than previous single-channel sluice boxes. And with that, then, they began a manufacturing plant out there at 13 Mile Richardson Highway, and not only constructed sluice boxes for the placer mining industry, but then spread out and began constructing sizing plants and screens and shaking screens and trommels and pre-sluice sizing equipment as well. In fact, as they support the entire mining industry with fabrication of special items, you know, little things you never think of, like dozer blade liners, and they rebuild loader buckets and ripper shanks, and have a whole variety of equipment repairs available. And this is the kind of thing that I think of as a contribution to the community. The industry in itself is one thing, but what it does for the community is quite another thing. It actually put another business online that supports our community and gets the money circulating around within the Fairbanks area. Now, once again, Hector's Welding is located out there at 13 Mile Richardson Highway. And for all those that are interested in them, their phone number is 488-6432. Now, you have to be interested in collecting a lot more gold and making a lot more profit in your placer mining operation. Once again, that's Hector's Welding, 13 Mile Richardson Highway. Phone number 488-6432. Now, maybe you'd like to spin off of that, Russ, a little bit and tell us how the petroleum industry would create different businesses in the Fairbanks area and how they might be supported and supportive.
Well, I wish I was a little better informed on that question. I think the primary contribution of the oil industry to the state of Alaska, as I think as we all know, is the state being the owner of the oil benefits by the production of that oil by the companies through the royalty share and through the taxes on the oil industry. And that, of course, fuels a lot of the economy of Fairbanks, as there's a high state payroll here. Most of the service industries that provide goods and supplies for the petroleum industry are located in Anchorage, primarily because that is the headquarters of the industry. My understanding is that the primary contribution to the Fairbanks economy is through the employment of people who actually work on the slope and bring those paychecks back to the Fairbanks economy, as well as some trucking industry and hauling industry. And there are a few industries I had heard, and again, speaking a little out of school, that there's a pipelining company or a company that makes wrappings, I believe, for pipes. But I think a lot of those possibilities are not being probably fulfilled as much as they could. But there is not a large manufacturing base in Fairbanks, really, or anywhere else in Alaska that is participating in that. If you were to go down to Houston, you would, of course, find foundries, many places where large equipment is made, offshore platforms are manufactured. Because they have the heavy industry support base, they can provide a lot of the very large and complicated equipment that the industry needs. And, I would certainly like to see more and more spinoffs in Alaska of manufacturing companies providing needs for the industry, but I don't really believe there's that much here in Fairbanks right now that's doing that. And I wish I could say there was, because it certainly would be good for PR for our industry to say that.
Well, we do have the trucking industry and a couple other support industries that are working in support of petroleum, and these, of course, are important. The in regard to the support, do you think there's any chance that there might be industry developing to support? I know you said right at the moment, and then in other towns, other areas where there are high oil productivity, that they have support. Is there any chance that we might develop that? Do you see it?
You may be talking to the wrong guy, because that's really not my end of the business, but the example that comes to mind, I think, most recently is there were some discussions in Anchorage of perhaps building some of the modules that go up to the North Slope in Anchorage. And I believe the problems they ran into there was that the cost of construction up here was perceived as being too high, and that it was more economic to build those in Seattle. I'm not necessarily saying I'm in favor of that. I'd like to see them built here too, but I don't really know what the costs were in here versus in Seattle. I don't see a great possibility there unless there is a major move to build an industrial base in the state of Alaska, and I don't really see that happening. Again, I wish I did, and I'd certainly love to see it happen and would encourage it, but I don't see it happening myself.
I understand that the pipeline is 800 miles long. Is that correct? About 800?
About that.
Yeah. And tell us, from the initiation of the oil into the pipe, how many pumping stations exist between there and Valdez?
Boy, you give me technical questions. You know, it's somewhere on the order of 10 or 11. I'm not sure exactly, but
well,
something
that,
like
actually
that.
The question, that wasn't the important question. There's this thing that they put in the pipe.
Yeah.
It's called, I was down at the Daily News Miner the other day, and I looked up, and there's this little monument-type thing sitting there, and they called it a pig. What is a pig?
Well, when oil flows through the pipeline, there's waxy materials, you might just call it gunk, in the oil that tends to coat the walls of the pipeline, and periodically that needs to be cleaned. And a pig, to simplify it, it's kind of like a cork with a lot of wire brushes sticking out of the side of it, which they simply put in the pipeline and pump through the pipeline along with the oil, and which scrapes the side of the pipe clean.
Oh, I see. And so that comes out, and what happens to all that gunk? Does it just go right on with the oil into the...
It goes on with the oil. It's some of it dissolves back into the oil. The rest of it is caught and, I suppose, disposed of down in Valdez. Most of it, though, it's part of the oil anyway. It just kind of coats out on the pipe. Once you stir it back up, it goes back into the oil, and it's not much of a problem.
I want to take a break for just a minute and talk about a couple of my friends. I'm going to tell you a story. Actually, I want to tell you a story. I was on my way to the university the other day. Actually, it was a couple of months ago, and I turned onto Farmers Loop Road off of College, and then, of course, you make a left turn up the hill to the university, and there was this lady there, and her car was in the middle of the street, and sticking out from where the rear wheel was supposed to be was this axle, and the wheel was way out into the middle of the road, and I pulled up there, and I said, can I help you somehow? Of course, the car was immobile,
And she said, yes. Would you please call a tow truck for me? I don't think I can move this vehicle. And it was a spectacular sight to see this car sitting there with this axle protruding out from the rear wheel area. And so what I've always done is I've carried Gabe's truck and auto phone number in my vehicle, so I simply went up to the office and gave them a call at 456-6156, and apparently they came out and took care of this lady's problem for her, because I didn't see her, and I had returned in 20 minutes, and she was gone. So apparently Gabe's truck and auto came out and saved the day for the lady who was stuck just about into the middle of the roadway leading to the university. I'd like to talk a little bit about Gabe and Kathy over there at Gabe's Truck and Auto. They, of course, repair all kinds of equipment, including light trucks and motorhomes and the big rigs. And they have been known, their reputation is for giving the best repair service in town. And in fact, a year or so ago, the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce gave Gabe's Truck and Auto their prestigious Raven About Fairbanks Award for providing the best vehicle service in Fairbanks. In addition to just maintenance type work, they also repair automatic transmissions, realign front ends, and repair mount and balance tires. And also, you have to keep in mind that they have new and rebuilt engines, and that these engines come with a 12-month or 12,000-mile warranty. There's an added feature over there at Gabe's. In fact, is they initiated what we call the no pass, no pay policy. And what I'm talking about here is the IM inspection. Gabe's Truck and Auto initiated the no pass, no pay policy. If your vehicle doesn't pass the IM inspection, you don't pay for it. And once again, we want to return to Gabe's Towing Service. They have three wreckers available 24 hours a day and can handle any size rig. Now, keep in mind, their number is 456-6156. And in these winter months, you might want to keep that number very close in case something drastic happens on our slippery roadways. You can turn your rag into ride at Gabe's Truck and Auto, located off Van Horn Road near Metro Field. Give them a call, 456-6156. And by the way, tell them you heard about their services from Jim on Alaska Gold Trails. Once again, I want to remind the listening audience that we're here with Dr. Russell Osterman, the head of the Petroleum Department at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So if you have any questions regarding petroleum and how it affects Alaska and perhaps its chemistry, give us a call. Our number here is 479-TALK. That's 479-8255. Russ, there is one question that I've always wondered about. How many petroleum type components are there that we see every day? I know you split out that we talk about a barrel of oil costs X amount of dollars. What is the price of oil about today?
Well, it's about 12 now, but it's moving down, which is of some concern to us, but around 12, I think.
$12 a barrel. What comes, do you have any idea what the different products are out of one barrel of oil, the percentages?
Well, I couldn't give you exact breakdown of percentages, but I can tell you this, that everything that you see around you that's made out of plastic or has a plastic-like appearance originated in natural gas or oil. And just as an exercise, wherever you happen to be sitting, if you just look around you and try to reach out and touch something somewhere that isn't plastic, these days that's a pretty hard thing to do. Many of the paints also have a latex or petroleum base to them. Vinyls, if you're in a car, almost everything in there is plastic, except depends on how old your car is. I guess my car, I think the whole thing is plastic. But almost everything is plastic. It's made out of petroleum. And that's a large percentage of about everything we deal with today.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we have the different kinds of fuels.
Right. There's certainly the diesel oils, the heating oils that we use here in town. Of course, gasoline we're all familiar with. And in many parts of the country, We include natural gas with petroleum as part of our business as well. Natural gas is used as a heating fuel.
How's that working in Alaska? Where do we use natural gas in Alaska?
Well, Anchorage has natural gas for heating in homes. They're piped up to the Kenai gas fields. In Fairbanks, we continually are discussing the idea of bringing a pipeline up from Anchorage or running one down to the lower 48 from Prudhoe Bay, but at the moment we don't have natural gas in Fairbanks.
When I was up at Barrow one time, I noticed that they were burning natural gas. Why are they burning natural gas?
Well, I don't know specifically why they were burning it, but there is a small gas field up at Barrow, which was, I believe, part of a naval petroleum field up there. And, in fact, there is gas supplied to Barrow for use in heating at that location. And normally when one flares gas, it's an upset or a little excess pressure, basically some small amount of gas you're trying to get rid of.
Tell us about what is the possibilities, what are the number of possibilities of bringing natural gas through Fairbanks? I think there was more than one proposal through Canada and through other areas. What were the proposals?
Well, generically we can deal with two of them. One is the concept of running a pipeline through Fairbanks, diverting down through Canada to the lower 48. I think they refer to Chicago nominally as the terminus of that. The other concept is running natural gas down to tidewater in Alaska, liquefying it and shipping it overseas. I'm on a committee, the Gas Technology Committee, the Society of Petroleum Engineers. In fact, we just had a meeting here about 3 weeks ago. And I wish I had a little rosier news in this area, but the perception is amongst the people on that committee that there's sufficient gas in the lower 48 for right now. There doesn't seem to be a great feeling amongst these people, who should certainly know about the gas supplies in the lower 48, that they're in danger of running out. That's what I guess I'm trying to say, is there doesn't appear to be an impending great demand for new natural gas sources in the lower 48. And, of course, that's what would ultimately fuel the need for running that pipeline down from Prudhoe Bay. I'm personally confident that pipeline will be built. I'm not sure which one is the better, the LNG or the lower 48 version. That's going to be purely economic, I think, as to which one turns out to be the best way to go. But I think you're still looking realistically at a number of years, 10, probably 12 years before we get into that business.
So far we've treated the plastics and the natural gas. What comes in between those? What products?
Well, the normal route for petroleum, if you were to take a barrel and track it from Alaska, it may very well end up in Houston. Okay, and if those of you who've been in Houston and know what the waterfront petroleum districts look like in Houston, it's a very complex place, and it's a veritable spaghetti bowl of pipes taking all sorts of intermediate compounds back and forth. Petroleum oil is essentially a mixture of a variety of compounds, of which kerosene is one, say about in the middle. There's tars that can be distilled out of it. Methane comes out of oil, which is natural gas. Ethane is used to produce ethylene, and that's one of the major components of producing plastics. So that's where they come from. Once a barrel of oil hits Houston, it's basically chopped up into gasoline, diesel oil, variety of products, and fed as intermediates to the plastics industry.
I think you've got a call here, Russ.
Thank you.
Hi. You're on the air?
I want to go back to natural gas for just a minute.
Okay, we've got just a couple of minutes.
I know, you short time. About 30 years ago, there was a proposal to pipe gas down to Fairbanks, which is a little bitty town then, from the Gubik gas fields. And as it happened, the pipeline was never built and so on. But if that was considered even feasible back then, for one thing, I don't understand why some gas can't be piped down to Fairbanks from Prudhoe Bay right now. I mean, the right of way exists and all of that. This might be outside of something that either one of you cares to comment on. But it seems to me that the oil companies are just thinking of tremendous markets. You know, if they can't ship it through a 48-inch pipeline, they're just not interested in the project.
Do you have an answer for that?
Let me go on, and you can either pass or comment on either part of this. The other thing is, if they've got mine mouth electric plants down at Healy, which is practical because it's sure a lot cheaper to build electric lines than it is to haul coal, I wonder why they can't build wellhead electric plants at Prudhoe to use the gas, because it seems to me that again that it's cheaper to build to lay electric lines than it is to lay pipeline.
I just have a few seconds left, I guess, to comment that the things that you're describing are feasible. Certainly one could build a pipeline to Fairbanks from either Kenai or from the North Slope. One could build an electric power plant on the North Slope. I like to believe that those projects are looked at and costed out, and that the conclusion is that the current system provides the most economic result. But I don't have probably any more information on that than you do, but certainly technically those things are feasible.
Okay, thank you
for the call. Well, it looks kind of like we're running out of time here, Russ. I want to thank you for joining us here today on Alaska Gold Trails. Dr. Russ Osterman, and next week's guest will be Mary Lou Teal. To all my friends out there, thank you for listening to Alaska Gold Trails, and happy prospecting.
ABC News, I'm Doug Limerick. The Federal Aviation Administration's ordered immediate test of takeoff alarm systems on nearly 2,000 Boeing 727 and 737 jets after finding that quite a few of the alarms were not working properly. More from ABC's Jim Slade.
This order requires airlines flying 727s or 737s to run immediate tests on the warning systems and to keep on testing them as long as they operate the planes. Federal officials indicated the problem requires attention so quickly that they have gone around normal procedures to get it out.
That order comes on the heels of tests made following the crash of a Delta jet in Dallas in August, a 727. It appeared the pilots tried to take off without setting the flaps properly. That alarm may not have sounded. 14 people were killed in that crash. I'll have more news after this.
Talk to me.
They've launched it.
That's impossible.
Tell that to the people in the field.
Okay, what do our sources say?
Well, there's an article in today's Wall Street Journal that says we've got a few days to...
In the battle for business, every second counts. You need the latest intelligence. Not once a week, not once a month. Every business day. You need today's Wall Street Journal. Now conveniently arranged in three sections. Section 1 zeroes in on major business and financial news. A new marketplace section concentrates on marketing strategies with expanded coverage of law and health and a daily column aimed at entrepreneurs. And Section 3 gives you clearly displayed financial tables, plus an emphasis on your personal finances. If you're depending on weekly business magazines for your plan of attack, you won't win many battles today. So, whether you're in the trading wars, the marketing wars, or the manufacturing wars, arm yourself with daily dispatches from the front lines. Today's Wall Street Journal.
An indictment could be returned against former Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos within a few...